Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Tonight's hosts are me, Patty, and
Brianna
and Janelle.
We all attend Laytonville High School. Tonight, our topic is defining poverty in rural Mendocino County. This weekend concludes the annual Thanksgiving holiday. People get together to be thankful for what they have and to share their bounty with others. It is a great way to prepare for the bad weather to come in the next months. Poverty does not go away at Thanksgiving, and poverty in rural Mendocino County has never gone away. The Willits News recently speculated that the marijuana industry will bring over $10 billion to our county this year, much of it going to rural areas. Yet it is clear to anyone who looks around that there are homeless and poor people everywhere. Some of these people are just passing through. Many have been here for years. The homeless in some parts of California can find food and shelter with a bit of effort. Is this true in rural Mendocino County? Defining poverty is a tricky question. There are statistics that we will share with you tonight. We all know many stories of poverty that do not fit in these numbers. And while many adults are judged by society for not maintaining shelter and food on their own, many young people face the consequences of poverty through no fault of their own. As the youth approach the time to make their own living, what kind of jobs are available here? And do they pay enough to live above the poverty line? Many youth are brought up by parents or a parent whose earnings place them below what the state calls poverty. The costs of living used to be considerably cheaper in rural Mendocino County. Rents today are not much lower than an urban area like Santa Rosa. And there are very few jobs available in the area like Laytonville. The beauty of the area and the sense of community compensate a bit for the lack of money. But whether you call it low income or poverty, many people feel economically pinched these days. Does the speculated wealth from marijuana trickle down to the poor and to the youth? Where would this county be if all the marijuana money disappeared? The timber industry jobs and revenues have shrunk dramatically in the past two decades. The wine industry is bringing in more money each year, but most of the jobs are going to the immigrant population. Have some growers found a way to share their bounty with the less fortunate? Should they be encouraged to do so? We hope that you are interested in these subjects and will want to participate. We're here at the Willits Studio, and our phone number will be 456-9991. We will encourage everyone to join in the discussion in about 20 minutes. Let's begin by talking about poverty and homelessness that we see in Laytonville and other rural parts of Mendocino County. Janelle, do you think there are students at our school who are basically homeless?
Actually, I do. On the car ride down here, I was speculating as to how many students in my senior class at Laytonville High have been transients in the last 5 years or so. My senior class has about 30 students in it, and to my knowledge, 19 of them have been transient in the last 5 years. And that's, you know, just a huge number.
Yeah. I mean, just from observing, you know, students in, you know, through school and everything, I know that a lot of people go through things. And a lot of times people aren't even aware, you know, the school isn't aware, I'm not aware of really how many students are homeless.
One of the things that I notice in Laytonville as being really impressive is that there's a huge amount of families who are willing to take in students or children who don't have a home at that time. My family and even, you know, a lot of my friends' families have taken in kids who either couldn't live at their home at that time because of their situation there, or who didn't have a home and let them come into their family and supported them.
Right. I mean, I completely agree. I think that there are a lot of kids who, you know, don't have a home a lot of the times. And Laytonville, I've noticed in particular, is really good about supporting families or youth who don't have a home. The community really does sort of stand up and just take people in. I know with the foster care system in Laytonville, there's people really try to keep kids in Laytonville who need to be fostered. You know, families become open to foster care or just become open to kids who need a place to stay outside of the home they can't be in or whatever reason. And so the community really does support youth in particular in giving them homes.
I have a statistic here from the California Center for Rural Policy that says that in Mendocino County, in most areas, there are around 25% of children under the age of 5 live in a family that's below the poverty level. The 25% range includes Laytonville, Branscombe, Leggett, Boonville, Navarro, and a few other places like that.
Well, just thinking about, you know, what we define as poverty in Mendocino County and, you know, what people actually live in, you know, and, you know, where they have their jobs, how they live in their homes, everything like that. That all sort of defines what poverty is. I know in Laytonville, for example, there's no jobs for people to get in Laytonville. You know, all you can do is be a clerk at, you know, the grocery store or at the Chevron. You know, there really is no jobs anywhere, and, you know, those jobs pay $7.50 an hour. You know, so, like, how are people expected to live above that poverty line?
So, Brianna, what do you think is the middle class in Laytonville?
What I've noticed in Laytonville is that there really isn't a middle class. There's the extremely poor, and then there's also the extremely wealthy, a lot of the time there are cases where it's not, but the extremely wealthy, a lot of the money is brought in from marijuana.
And what are the symptoms of the extremely poor that you've noticed?
I've seen a lot of kids who come to school in the mornings, and it looks like they might have slept out all night, or students that are hungry, they don't have... A lot of kids, it's not that they're homeless, it's that they don't have a stable home. They're sleeping inside at night, but in different houses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more like transient.
Right.
Yes, yeah.
I've also noticed a lot of, especially living out in... up in the hills behind Laytonville, in the areas back there, a lot of houses don't have, you know, running water. So it's difficult for, you know, people who are living out outside of Laytonville to, you know, take a shower or do their laundry.
Yeah. I'm also a peer counselor at Laytonville High School, and I was talking to one of the social workers that was at Laytonville once, and we were talking about giving out food to high school students, and I was asking why. And I remember she had told me, you know, like, you don't know how many people come every day and just grab this food because it's the only food they're going to actually be able to eat that day, you know, because when they go home, they're not going to have anything. And I think it really is true.
One of the things that I was thinking about is... Is housing affordable in Laytonville? What do you guys think? Is there any affordable housing?
I think that reliable and kept up housing is very expensive and hard to come by in Laytonville. I mean, there's a lot of rundown buildings that are affordable that you could be maybe renting off the $7 an hour job you had at Geiger's or something like that. But really, most rent... houses for rent are above $1,000 or at that $1,000
And mark. That's really, even if you can find a house for rent. I know it's really hard, especially in Laytonville, and from what I've heard in Willits, to even find a house that is affordable to rent.
My family moved to Laytonville about 5 years ago, and we looked around for houses that were affordable. And we actually bought our house because, you know, there weren't any affordable houses to rent in Laytonville that weren't, you know, run down or in really bad condition. And so we were really surprised that, you know, people trying to move from Laytonville from other cities, it's really difficult to find a place to live.
And just analyzing that sort of, you know, that amount of money you'd be having to pay for a house to rent, you know, $1,000 a month. And when you're making $7 an hour or even $10 an hour, you can't make it, you know, paying for rent, food, and any other gas, you know, anything else that, you know, is a bill once a month, you know, that just, it's impossible to make it off of that.
Has anyone noticed a connection between drugs and poverty in our community?
I mean, there's a huge connection between drugs and poverty. I mean, looking at Laytonville in specific, I think Janelle said, there's two extremes, the really wealthy and the really poor. And what I notice is the really wealthy are the people who are growing marijuana or some type of drug as a living.
I think that besides the marijuana growing, which is really widespread in Laytonville and in Mendocino County, a lot of the lower class families, the families that are living in poverty, turn to drugs, not just marijuana, other drugs as well. And because they feel like they have nothing to lose. And I think that, you know, it makes their situation a lot worse because they're spending money on drugs instead of everything else. And I think that not just marijuana, but there are a lot of other drugs in Laytonville and in the high school and people's parents and in the community in general, even the whole county.
Right. Well, and just thinking about how many youth are displaced because of these drugs. You know, like, it isn't even the youth who are doing the drugs as much as their parents. And it is marijuana. You know, it's, you know, meth or coke or whatever drug that their parents are doing. And all of a sudden, you know, these youth, they don't have the money to support their families, you know. And so these kids are going home hungry every day or needing to go stay at their friend's house. Or, you know, like, you know, all of a sudden their landlord is taking back their house or whatever. You know, like these, that's, you know, some of the effects that drugs do have on poverty.
I knew a girl who her dad was addicted to opiates, and he would get suicidal. He would get really violent, and he was in and out of jail a couple of times. But when he was living at home, her and her sister and her mother really didn't feel safe staying there, and they ended up staying with, you know, some relatives somewhere else or friends. And I think that's something that really unfairly affects a lot of students, is that their parents are abusing drugs and are abusive parents, and they can't stay in their homes. Even, you know, if they aren't transient, they just can't stay in their current living situation.
And there's also kids who use themselves, you know, and instead of getting proper help or talking to a parent or something like that, you know, many youth end up out on the street because of their drug problems in that way.
I'm also in peer counseling, and last year we had a parent night at our school that talked to parents about drug use and substance abuse for teenagers, because we have seen a large influx of substance abuse, especially for minors at our high school. And it seemed to me that the parents that were there weren't the parents who their children were doing the drugs. And part of the problem is reaching the parents of the kids who are at risk for using drugs.
Well, and also getting the proper services to help youth and just people in general when they are faced with drugs or poverty. Is there sort of services in Laytonville that help?
Well, in Laytonville and in Willits, I believe, There are good, there are health clinics, you know, the Laytonville Health Center, that do offer services for substance abuse, for emotional counseling. I don't feel that they're broadcast very much. And sort of on the same lines as giving help to people, there aren't any homeless shelters in Laytonville or Willits, and I think a lot of Mendocino County, a lot of rural areas, that, you know, if you are homeless, you can't go somewhere and stay the night. And I think that's a really big issue, that we don't have a system like that to help people in our county.
Well, and also there really are, I think, a lot of services that people could be getting if they had the proper knowledge of where to go and what things they need to go through to get these services. You know, just even the minimum of getting, like, food stamps or something, you know, some sort of money to help support their family is really offered in, I think, the rural counties. Just there hasn't been enough promotion. Community members don't talk about it. There isn't people going out and saying, hey, you're having a hard time, go to this food bank or this place, and they will hook you up, you know.
But I think part of that is I helped at a food bank this last weekend for Thanksgiving, and a lot of the people that came to the food bank were treated very poorly. So I think part of the reason that those people don't seek help is they're afraid of how they're going to be judged, like they did something wrong because they're poor.
Well, there is a sort of class system, isn't there? Like, in our society, based on whether you're poor or not. Like, how do you, don't you think that people are affected on the way they're treated? That affects them?
I think people unfairly assume that just because a family is poor, that it's because they did something wrong or they were lazy, rather than that they were less fortunate or they fell on hard times. And people forget how lucky they are compared to others or what they were given.
Like we were talking about before, the fact that there aren't very many jobs in Laytonville, and there are even less jobs in Laytonville that pay enough to get by. A lot of, you know, families work at, you know, the mill, and then they, you know, have a night job, you know, working somewhere else, working at Boomer's as a server or something. And even then, just the middle class in Laytonville is, I think, so much lower than the middle class in other cities, say, you know, San Francisco. If you're middle class in San Francisco, you know, you're buying, you know, new cars, and you're worried about whether or not you can, you know, make the payments on those cars. But just the fact that you have them at all. In Laytonville, the only people I see with new cars are the pot growers, or, you know, the maybe three families that have enough money from actually working legitimate jobs that can afford that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there's a difference also between people who grow marijuana on the side just to really get by, and people who just grow marijuana as a living. You know, there's I think there's a lot of people in Mendocino County who do grow marijuana. And, I mean, this isn't really a topic that's discussed very frequently, but, I mean, it's basic truth. You know, most people do grow pot just to, you know, to actually be able to be above that poverty line and to be able to go out and, you know, have enough money to buy food and to get maybe, you know, a little something extra. But I mean, I think that there's a difference between that and the people who are getting, you know, bringing in the $10 billion, you know, to Mendocino County.
And that speculated statistic, the $10 billion last year, that was brought in from marijuana money. Some people might hear that and think that it's exaggerating or that can't possibly be accurate. But I think that, you know, that's pretty close to what would be an accurate estimate. There is really that much marijuana being grown in Mendocino County and that much money coming in from it.
Should marijuana growers be sort of contributing to the community?
And also, I think some of the growers who have been in our community for a couple years do contribute, but a lot of the time it's people moving from the Bay Area or other cities and coming to our community and not really being a part of it, just being here to grow marijuana.
And I completely agree. I think that there's a lot of people who in the community support the community. You know, where I'm always at, you know, bake sales or student dinners through the high school or something, and I look at all the people who come to the dinners, and it's the people who have five kids and one of them is, you know, putting on the dinner, or it's the person who's buying the brownies was actually the person that baked the brownies for the class or something like that. It's the people who have kids inside of the community or have some sort of relationship inside of the community that are contributing. It's the people in the outside of the community, and this is whether you're a Pawker or not, are the ones who I don't think support, you know, people with low-income families or, you know, just support the community as a whole.
I've noticed that as well. In Laytonville, when we have, you know, a club putting on a dinner, like, say, you know, this Gee Club dinner, a lot of the people that come and support that are the ones that are involved in the school system and are involved in the community. And this having nothing to do with pot growers or who grows marijuana. I noticed that the teachers at Laytonville High School always, you know, they contribute and they do what they can. A lot of them, you know, they can't afford extra things. They can't afford to, you know, buy the nice cars. But the people who live in Laytonville really do help support Laytonville projects.
Well, should pot growers be contributing to the community? Is that morally or, you know, legally ethical?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's legally ethical if what they're doing is illegal in the first place. But morally, I think that if you are growing marijuana in Laytonville, you know, you should try and contribute to that community because, you know, you're using their resources, you're attracting people to their community, so you really should put back into that. There was a man named Les Crane who moved to Laytonville a couple years ago, and he was a really big pot grower. He advertised medical marijuana and stuff in High Times, one of the medical marijuana magazines, and he opened up a youth center in Laytonville. It was called Your Place, and I think that kind of, you know, putting back into the community. Like, he had the money, and what he was doing is he was, whether people, you know, think it's right for him to grow pot or think that he should be doing it here, the fact that he took some of that money and gave it to the community, I think, is something that should be recognized.
Well, and I also think Les Crane was one of the only honest people in Mendocino County. You know, he actually came out and said, you know, this is what I'm doing, and really was open about it. And I think that definitely scared a lot of people off. And he did get a bad reputation, I think, for that exact thing. But in a way, he really did symbolize what probably should be going on with everyone in the community. I mean, I remember, you know, on Thanksgiving Day, the only place in Laytonville that was offering free food was Les Crane's. You know, he had, you know, for anyone to come up and get Thanksgiving dinner. You know, he was always giving money to, you know, giving donations to all sorts of things, you know, and that's really what needs to be happening. I think it's a responsibility that everyone has, you know, just step up to the plate and, you know, give it.
Because also, I mean, if you look at it, marijuana growers, they don't pay income tax, and a lot of the time, even though they are paying sales tax for the brand new vehicle they bought, they're not even buying it in Mendocino County, so it doesn't even come into our county.
And, I mean, I sort of have to go out there and say that there are, I know, people who do support the community. There are growers who do give a lot of money to the community. It's just, you know, it can't be just on those few specific people. I think it should be everybody. So we're going to open the phone lines now. The number is 456-9991. We'd really like to hear from everybody. We'd like to encourage the youth, their parents, and the concerned friends and the listening audience. Please call in if you have any questions or insight on poverty in Mendocino County or the effects of a large invisible economy. What steps could be taken to share the bounty and help those in need? The phone number is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call in and be a part of this discussion on poverty in rural Mendocino County. We'd really like to hear from you.
One of the things that that I find really interesting in Laytonville community is that there's such a huge contrast. Like Brianna was saying earlier, there isn't much of a middle class in Laytonville. There are the really rich pot growers who live in the hills, and then there's the poor families that, you know, live in town or don't grow marijuana.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for the show. I really appreciate it, and it's an aspect of homelessness that I never had really thought about before, the impact on the younger people. But I wanted to comment on the discussion of bringing up, you know, the marijuana growing, and I really appreciate it. I happen to have a small business in Fort Bragg. I'm really struggling, as many other small business owners are. We pay taxes, you know, and our taxes are going towards social services and maintaining the streets. And I think the issue of, I know there are responsible pot growers. I've watched the industry develop from when I first came in the, you know, early 70s to the county, when everybody was just giving away bud, you know, when there was a lot of love and sharing before everybody got greeting and it became such a cash crop. But it's a huge issue for me, and also the abuse of the medical marijuana, you know, growers. I think that that's another great unspoken social issue. Yes, there are people who have legitimate needs for medical marijuana, and I personally am in favor of legalization. I mean, I'm not against marijuana usage per se. But I think the issue of this separate economy, you know, I know a lot of people that have a prescription. They grow more. They sell it. They take trips to Mexico. They're driving cars that a lot of us that are working really hard can't afford. And there really is. It's a whole other social situation that's simultaneous, you know, culture. And it has not really been a socially conscious a responsible part of our culture, I think. And the abuse of the medical marijuana law is really a huge issue for me, too. So I really appreciate that you're upfronting it. And also, I think the lack of your responsibility of growers. I mean, as the potency of the marijuana got stronger and stronger over the years, have growers really been responsible about the accessibility of it to the younger children, of younger and younger kids that are growing very, very potent weed? Are they really responsible as to who's buying it and where it's going on the other end?
Right.
So I think marijuana use is a huge issue, and the counterculture has never, maybe because it's illegal, we haven't been able to speak honestly about it, but I think it's really time, and I appreciate your upfronting it. Thanks.
Well, I did have a question for the caller, but this is to anyone in the listening audience. You know, what can people who grow pot, or any drug for that matter, really, how can they contribute to the community without exposing themselves? Because obviously that's a legitimate worry. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, this is a really great show you guys are doing. I think it would be wonderful if someone could put it together, kind of a 1% campaign where all these people who are making a lot of money aren't paying income tax. Maybe if they could be encouraged to give to tithe, which is a traditional way, to tithe or give 1% of their income anonymously to various organizations, I think a lot of people would step up to the plate. I think they're not sure how to do that. They're not sure if they should be doing that, although they know in their hearts they should. I think if somebody were to create, here's a list of places where you can go lay down some $100 bills. you know, here's a safe way for you to kick down to the community. I think most of the people who are Mendocino residents, long-term Mendocino residents, care very deeply about the health of their community. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a huge project, but I think that you'd get a good hourly. Thanks again for your show.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, that is a one perspective, you know, really. And honestly, to anyone out there who is wanting to give money and doesn't know how, I think you could go to almost any organization and they have a fund or some sort of fund that you can just donate to. You know, everyone takes donations, you know, whether it's the school or, you know, the fire department, whoever, you know, donate. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. Very good show. Wonderful. Refreshing. But I just want to remind you that we're all Californians here, and marijuana growing is legal in our state. We decided that, and we're all exposed. You know, we're all legal, except for the feds, who say it's not legal. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you. Thank you very much for the show.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah. So I really would like to encourage anyone in the listening audience, you know, call in on any of the issues that are pertaining to poverty or to, you know, low-income families or to, you know, how the drug economy is affecting this economy. So one idea that one of the callers sort of aroused in me was there have been so many businesses in Laytonville, especially restaurants, who have, you know, tried to start up, tried to, you know, get a business going, and my community just hasn't supported it. You know, like maybe they last a year, and then all of a sudden, it's gone. You know, they have to shut down. They don't get enough people coming to the restaurant. You know, you see no really, like, gift stores in Laytonville, you know, for that matter. So, you know, like, really, I don't really see the community coming and contributing on that level.
Once again, the number is 456-9991. Please call in. We love to hear from you. We would really like to involve you in our discussion. The last caller that called and said that because this is California and California has voted that medical marijuana should be legal. He did mention that, you know, federally it's illegal. And just the theory that that we, because it California voted that, the federal government, you know, does have jurisdiction over all the states. And when two laws are in conflict, you know, the federal law is the one that is enforced. So I would just sort of like to point out that, in my opinion, how I view medical marijuana in California is that it is still illegal because that's what the federal government has ruled.
But I also think it might be beneficial to make it legal because part of what we've been talking about is the problem with the overly wealthy growers in Mendocino County, and if it was legal, I don't think that there would be those people because the people who wanted to buy it would just grow their own plants.
Right. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. You were just touching on the thing that I was going to say is I think we should keep marijuana illegal because it would affect our economy in a big way, and that's all I want to say on that. I'd like to address the issue of homelessness. I'm a single mom with two kids, and I've taken in a foster child of a woman who has no home and has been looking for a year. And it is a serious problem. And I think a solution is for people to donate their pieces of land around on the coast and in Ukiah area to people who can come and build a small, sustainable house and have sustainable communities on donated land and get some grant money and start sustainable businesses, alternative fuels, you know, whatever it is that can keep us sustainable in this community. And I'm for local shopping and local production of things that we can do here.
So right.
That's my input.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, you know, just like that caller said, really contributing to the community, but also really trying to be aware of, you know, what the problems really are going on. You know, you see, you know, your kid's friend comes over to the house and really doesn't have someone to go. You know, be open to those sort of things and to, you know, just giving for help as well. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for your show. The point I wanted to bring up is about pertaining to youth, about, you know, there's a lot of people who talk about marijuana use as being non-harming, and the fact is that in our culture, with it being illegal, we end up locking kids up in the California Youth Authority for the crime of possession of marijuana, and we end up filling our youth prisons with thousands of mostly ethnically minorities. You know, these kids end up coming out of that system and end up not really being able to function in society. And I think that is the cause of youth homelessness and definitely a major problem. So I just wanted to point out the fact that marijuana is not benign because of the larger picture that we live in. Thanks for your show.
Thank you. Once again, I'd like to encourage anyone to call in. The number is 456-9991. So I have a question to all the listeners. Is a poor class necessary in our society, or can we all just be, you know, on equal levels, or what, you know? Caller in there.
Hi. I have just a comment about certain economic viability of marijuana. And to look at anything's economic viability, you have to be able to look at its overall kind of the overall input of its effect on the resources that supply it. So, for example, subsidized gas is actually a greater economic toll on the earth, or certain products that exploit our resources, although they are cheap in an economic standpoint, the overall, like, effect of them is much greater as a detriment to the resources that supply and support us, just in the overall standpoint of that. Here on Earth, and that, you know, marijuana money or whatever kind of money is generated within a community is to take charge of your own wealth is actually looking at the overall whole of, you know, what it is or the money that is coming in. Does that make sense?
No. Sorry.
Basically, what I'm trying to say is, you know, that... an economic system has to take, like, complete, it's kind of an analogy, really.
Okay, yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Thank you.
Well, I have a question for you,
yeah.
Caller. Do you think that people are responsible or are, do have a responsibility to contribute back to their community in that sort of way?
I think definitely they do, because... it's really a sign of, like, responsibility to yourself
mm-hmm.
to be able to say, like, this is the money and this is what I'm supporting with any economic, well, as if it's a subsidized staple and it's really harming the earth. And so what resources is, like, where does that $10 billion go? Does that go into, like, things that actually build up our community and our environment, you know, our
right.
overall natural resources, if you will?
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's basically my point.
Okay. Thank you, caller.
Right.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
People need to know that marijuana is the tree of life, and it's mentioned in the Bible, and that it mentions that we have to keep the Lord Jesus Christ's commandments in order to have the tree of life. And, like, whenever a teacher greets a kid for doing something good in class, and gives them a piece of candy or something. This is what the Lord Jesus Christ gives men for keeping his commandments and keeping the ways that he wishes for us to have. And I'd just like to let everyone know that Revelations chapter 2, verse 7 says, "He that hath an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. He that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." And in the Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, it says, "Behold, I give you every green herb bearing seed with the seed of itself inside of the fruit of itself." Anyways, the seed of itself, a hemp seed, is a shell, and then inside the shell is the fruit, and it bears its fruit. Anyways, I can't explain exactly, but anyways, right. Marijuana is the tree of life, and in order to have the tree of life, we must keep the Lord Jesus Christ's commandments. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, caller.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, basically, I just want to know if anybody felt that the California lottery had helped our school systems out. And if they used that much money to help our schools, how come we didn't notice it?
Right. I definitely don't think the schools get helped out that much.
Is KCYX becoming Christian Fundamentalist marijuana-fed radio?
Well, it's free speech radio. Sorry.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yes. You're welcome.
The views expressed by our callers are not necessarily the views of us as individuals, or KZYX as an organization.
Okay. Thank you, caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm riding in a car with my kids right now. We're living in Laytonville.
Mm-hmm.
And the announcer said something about the businesses pitching in more. And my daughter, she goes around and she collects money for her school. And, the businesses in Laytonville have always been really... really helpful in that sense. So I just wanted to say that we're really proud of our community that we live in, and that we wish that a lot more folks had a work ethic like some of the people that have businesses around Lakeville, because there's some people like Diane that runs the auto parts store. She just volunteers every weekend to open skating up and.
Mm-hmm.
This makes it a great place to live. So, but I really do believe that if people paid their taxes, that would be good. It would help out our economy here. So thank you, and thanks for the show.
Thank you, Colin.
Right, and I agree with that last caller and want to emphasize that the businesses do really contribute to our community. It's the people outside of the businesses and outside the community that don't really contribute. Caller, you're on the air.
Good evening. Thank you for the show. I'm sorry I don't have any easy answer either, not even a good Bible quote. But
right.
I do think a little historical approach to prohibition and the effects of prohibition are probably going to help us out, looking back to prohibition of alcohol, but, maybe ahead to the prohibition of organ selling or abortion or whatever next becomes only available through staying under the radar, and then the long-range effects of that, where everyone must keep their head down and cannot get together and cannot form up in unions or otherwise. Mm-hmm. So in a way, people are robbed of their power by taking that path. But nevertheless, it's in a shrinking or, let's say, a degenerating economy where the banking system has not been entirely healthy, and inflation might be coming around or other things happening. Increasing poverty leads people to taking alternative paths. The lesson of prohibition was probably not the prohibition of alcohol, but how unhealthy the economy truly was and why the Depression came about.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking out at the Fed and the continued criminalization, the insistence on the criminalization of the product, and not to mention the kind of forethought that you're giving it about what to do next in the event of enlightened legislation calling for legalization and amnesty at some point in the future, what might actually happen next. A lot of people are afraid of that. A lot of people can't even think about that. And yet I think everybody needs to think about things not being able to continue business as usual, given the increasing price of oil and scarcity of certain resources and so forth. In other words, pulling together may actually help. However, whether it's through a radio show or meetings in person at Area 101 or whatever, that it's all good if it leads to increased communication amongst the people that are concerned.
Well, how can people contribute to the community now or in the future?
Without surfacing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a really good question. I think it takes a creative approach in that nothing exists, so you have to create something out of the ether, and something that's never been done before, or find the instances where it has been done successfully and reapply those locally. That takes a certain amount of patience, and I guess there's a leap of faith involved, too, that the people working creatively together can create things that haven't existed in the past, or at least they haven't existed in this situation in the past.
Right.
And I'm sorry I couldn't be more specific, or I didn't have a better plan for you this evening. But
It's okay. Thank you, caller.
Yeah, thanks for the show.
Once again, I'd like to remind everyone that the number is 456-9991. Please call in and just be a part of this discussion.
I would like to comment on something an earlier caller was talking about, and that is that because such a large percentage of people in Laytonville and people in Mendocino County grow pot, and that's what they do for a living, if pot, you know, being illegal were to be enforced, or if for some reason that, might I say, profession was no longer available, I think that a lot of these growers don't have any other skills. They don't have, a lot of them haven't been to college. They can't get jobs doing other things, and they just don't really know how to do things like that. And that would definitely increase the poverty in our towns, just because these people don't know how to go out and get another job doing something. They don't have any of those skills.
Well, just I'm just thinking about all the kids, you know, in the past 4 years that I know who have graduated from high school and still haven't left Laytonville, and who really are, you know, growing pot or dealing drugs of some sort. And really, like, people, that's, you know, they're learning their life skills right now. And when they can't go out and, you know, they don't have even any carpentry skills or any basic, utility skill like that, when they can't even go out and do that, you know, you're stuck, you know, working the counters at Geiger's or something like that for your whole life. And although those are good, those are good stepping stones, it really is hard to keep up a household and keep up those bills. Like, I have a question. What really is a livable wage in Mendocino County or in Laytonville?
Well, in Laytonville, the one of the things I've noticed is that the rent is too high. For what you're paying for. I think that it's a ridiculous amount. And the average job pays around, you know, $8. And I would guess that you would really need to get paid around $12 an hour to live. Mm-hmm. And not very many jobs, especially in Mendocino County, pay that much.
If that, yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
You asked the question earlier about if a poor class is required.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer that, it depends on the system that you're talking about. And if you're going to do the capitalistic system, it requires poor class.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, we have outsourcing to other countries that are even lower down than us with less opportunity to maintain the capitalist system. Thus, the problems with places like Walmart and such like that. And if you note, if you keep an eye on it in the future, when I say this, it's that stock market is in direct correlation to the unemployment rate. When the unemployment rate is up, the stock market is doing great. When unemployment is down, it tends to drop.
Mm-hmm.
If you go down to social services, where you just asked the question about what's a livable wage and such like that, minimum wage, you go down to social services and read their charts as to what they consider poverty or not really making it, it's all below what the minimum wage pays.
Right.
So even with the government's own statistics, the government in itself knows that the minimum wage that gets resisted to be raised constantly, they resist it. They require it to be low so that there is a poor class.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the things that happens in a general sense is there is a push constantly by minority people or people in minority groups or theoretical minority groups to be equal with, say, the white male wage earner. But the white male wage earner in America earns minimum wage, the average one.
Mm-hmm.
Minimum wage is below poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So, and depending on where you live, definitely in California it is. If you're, you know, in some other state, it's all relative. But to answer your question, yes, you need a poor class to make a capitalistic system work.
Thank you, caller.
Thanks.
Right. Well, and just going off what that caller was saying, you know, the child care in Mendocino County has speculated that a person with one wage earner who has a child in preschool spends 64% of his income on housing and the rest 42% on child care for that child. So, you know, like, are we actually allowing people to live in this society, you know?
Hello.
Caller, you're on there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, is that me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. I was listening to the caller before, he was talking about the difference between capitalism and communism, and that was really good. And the thing I was thinking about that is that seems to me that we're supposed to have a democracy, but we never get to vote on whether we have capitalism or communism economic system. And the difference between the two is, basic difference that I found is that capitalism won't work with love and communism won't work without love. You know, because a person that's young and single and able to work would have to work and pay more than a person that was disabled and had a lot of children. You know, but it takes love on both sides. That's why communism failed, because they omitted God, which is love, and so they failed. But capitalism, it looks like it's going to be doomed too, because it's like ants floating on the water, and the poor are the ones on the bottom, and the rich float on the bodies of the poor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's so we have to be able to vote, but we have to have an open ballot. We can't seem to trust the ballot anymore, so we've got to come up with some way of having an open ballot and have a true democracy and a more social programs, more like Canada and stuff like that, and not have this harsh capitalistic survival of the fittest type of economy.
All right. Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Caller, you're on the air.
Good evening. Thanks for your show. I would love to draw your attention to the question of institutional credibility and how that affects the things that we're talking about tonight. That's all I can offer. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you, caller. Caller, you're on the air?
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
It's Mystery here calling you guys. I think in the last book I read on statistics that McClellan wrote, Sociology, was that 4% of the people have to be on below the poverty level for the government to work. That's the way they had it figured out.
Excuse me, did you say 4%?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But what I wanted to say is that going through a lot of hard times in my life as a child and then raising families, people, if they stay closer to their little small communities, you know, can do a lot of things to minimize that, you know, the extent of poverty where young teenage girls, for instance, when I was growing up, would bring all their clothes, you know, together on a weekend, and as they outgrew them, they'd switch them, you know,
mm-hmm.
change clothes, change shoes. They learned how to sew, you know, and repair clothing instead of just throwing it away. And there's a lot of waste that way, throwing things away. And instead of just giving it to the big things like Goodwill or those places, if you had a church or some place in the community where you could store it, and then people who needed it could just go ahead and get it, you know. Or you're throwing it away anyway, so give it to them for free.
Well, thank you very much.
Same with food, you know. You can have a little place in the church with shelves and some food, and then they can go there, and they don't have to necessarily go to the food bank or anything. They can just go there. But, it's a matter of a few people getting together and not making it like we're giving you something. It's like a wonderful thing to do, you know. So thank you for being there, you guys. You're doing a good job.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Sort of on that, one of the things that I notice my family doing and lots of other families is actually donating, you know, clothes to the Goodwill. And I think that that a lot of families do that. You know, they go and donate clothes that are too small for them. And I think a lot of people also shop at the Goodwill. I shop at the Goodwill. So I think to say that our community doesn't use resources like that one in particular, I think that we actually do use that.
Well, and also around this, you know, these upcoming holidays, it's also sort of nice to think about, you know, going out and, you know, there's all these toy pledges or, you know, food banks, all these extra things that or programs that are needing money. So, you know, if you want to contribute that way, go, you know, pledge a toy to someone who won't get it for Christmas or something like that. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi there. Your conversation is inspiring a lot of thought in me. And initially was a little bit confused whether you were talking about pot growing in Laytonville or whether you were talking about a sustainable community.
Caller, I hate to interrupt you, but could you turn down your radio?
Oh, I'm not on my radio, but I am on my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
So are you still getting too much static?
No, it's better. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So I just think that any small community has the opportunity of creating a model community that could embrace all levels of economic status, ethnicities, by creating first of all, by embracing individuals and who they are and what they have to contribute in the community, creating projects in the community where everyone could feel good about what they were doing, by including single parents and single parent families so that children grow up feeling like they're part of the community instead of being different than everyone else and feeling like they can contribute, mm-hmm. and giving them a wholesome feeling of being needed and wanted within a community. There's so many opportunities that go, once one puts their mind to it, can create so much for individuals, for a community, and we've seen models of that in the past when Voltaire or John Waterhouse created communities that were out of homeless people that were self-sustaining. It's possible, and communities can, and people can come together and do something that's really powerful and big. It might not be on a global level, but in the beginning, it can be within a community.
Right. Thank you, caller. We're running out of time.
Okay, sorry. Bye-bye.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts tonight have been me, Janelle,
Brianna,
and Patty.
Thank you to our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willett studio. Youth Speaks Out is in need of funding. If you as an individual or an organization can help sponsor this project, please contact the director, Dan Roberts. Dan may be reached by phone at 459-1760, by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. That's www.youthspeaksout.net. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who have expressed them. Our next show will be the last Sunday of the month. That's December 31st at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening, and good night.